Welcome to Apple at Work, the podcast all about Apple and the enterprise. My name is Bradley Chambers, your host as always. This week we have a first-time guest on the show who is from one of my favorite companies in the Apple ecosystem. Steve from 1Password joins the show. Steve, welcome to Apple at Work.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We were talking off air that 1Password really goes back. It's probably my oldest using Mac, the app on my Mac that I'm still using, that and Text Expander, you know, I've been using since I'm pretty sure Bush was in office, and just been a long time customer of 1Password. And it really is at the center of my personal security posture in terms of just how I manage sensitive data. And there's really 1Password is one of those companies that I've always trusted to do the right thing. It's always been on the forefront of new technology like passkeys and things like that. But just even in how you all have continued to embrace everything that makes the Apple ecosystem great. I mean, the way that 1Password is so tightly integrated on iOS now, it just is a testament to what the work Apple has done, but also the work you have done as well. So, welcome to the show. Can you give us a background on what you do at 1Password?
Yeah, sure. So I've actually been using 1Password as long as you have. I think I bought it in Mac Heist 3 back in 2007 or 2008. So it's literally the first app I install on every single device. So I consider it a rare privilege to be able to call myself the chief product officer at 1Password. So my job is basically directing product strategy and the roadmap. So all the designers, the product managers, the UX researchers, the partnerships folks and the product marketers work for me. So yeah, I consider it a sort of a rare responsibility, and it's pretty cool being able to work on an app that basically I've been relying on for my digital life for close to 20 years now. Gosh.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's an incredible ecosystem. It's really evolved. You know, again, going back to the early days, it was a personal tool. Like the idea of a password manager at work wasn't really there yet. But over the years, and obviously 1Password still works great for families. Like there's a 1Password families account. It still works great for personal use. But you all have evolved heavily into the enterprise, and I think it's as the needs of the enterprises have evolved, they've been more receptive to password managers and kind of going all in on something that can work with their business as it scales, you know, easy onboarding new users. It's tightly integrated into the browser, but it's also secure and auditable. And I think that's the key. What's it been like as, you know, you all have continued to grow in the enterprise? I mean, how do you stay, you know, how do you stay active in like meeting the needs of, you know, today's business users, you know, the end users, but also meeting the needs of the IT team behind those end users?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's a cool business because, you know, when this business was started back in the day with Dave and Sarah and Rustem and Natalia, really, they started out just asking their friends and family in the Mac community, like, hey, what problems do you have? And the number one thing was, hey, I hate managing my passwords. And I always like to think about the fact that, like, back in 2007, 2008, it was relatively simple, right? You might have been using 6 or 7 apps. I don't know about you. Now I have over 1,300 items in 1Password. And that's a direct result of SaaS sprawl, right? Like we're using more and more apps. Like even yesterday, I was looking at this Clef Notes app that seemed pretty cool. It's like a generative AI sort of recording tool. I'm a big fan of Bear, but you know, I'm up for any new productivity tool. So because people are using more and more apps, because people are, you know, using e-commerce on the web, sort of the sprawl of what you need to protect and have unique credentials around has exploded, right? And we've added things over time over the last 2 decades around like developer tools, and that's one of our fastest growing areas. Obviously, like multi-factor authentication, social sign-in, and now passkeys over the last year and a half have become a bigger and bigger priority. So really where we've sat is we try to make security the easy thing to do for end users. And people have brought us to businesses. Like so often for us, a customer will come to us saying like, hey, we just realized, I was actually talking to a big single sign-on provider a few weeks ago. They're just saying like, yeah, our infrastructure team was using 1Password to store like infrastructure secrets. And that's what sort of convinced us, hey, maybe we should get this more broadly provided for our employees. So it's sort of a classic, make security easy, make it effectively like a productivity tool. People bring it to work, and we're probably the only like shadow IT sort of security app that people bring to businesses.
Oh, I never thought about that, like the shadow IT 1Password rollout, which in some ways that's a good thing because it shows employees are thinking through that. And again, you know, as good as the built-in password managers are in the browsers today, certainly for business use, it doesn't scale up to what businesses need. And so I think you all have been at the forefront of meeting those business IT needs, but also, you know, still being an app that end users like love to use. I mean, I absolutely love 1Password. As I mentioned, been using it for many, many years, and I you know, just absolutely love it. But again, that doesn't mean that everything is all rosy in the IT and security industry. There is this, obviously, you know, as good as the tools have gotten, threats have continued to grow with leaps and bounds. And now we're kind of entering this age of generative AI, which, you know, you think about how this will impact cybersecurity with fake videos, fake audio, like, you know, the ramifications are staggering. And 1Password just released its annual State of the Enterprise Security Report. And we'll have a link in the show notes. You can go download the full report. The PDF is a great read. What's the goal of this survey? When you all embark on gathering the data, what's the overall goal that you're trying to reach?
So we basically surveyed 1,500 employees, including 500 like security professionals, just to give sort of a sense of, hey, what are the challenges that you're seeing? How are your employees getting work done? And are people bringing applications to work faster than before? You know, it's one thing for like Gartner and like the big business firms to say, hey, I think Gartner is quoting right now about 35% of apps used at work are unknown to business, and people are using twice as many apps at work than they were prior to the pandemic. But for us, like, we wanted to just like go straight to the source, go to end users and see what we're learning from folks. And, you know, a couple of like big stats here is more than half of the employees we surveyed admitted being lax about security policies. 1 in 3 employees are using unapproved apps for work too. One of the things that we all feel, especially like the, you know, post iPhone era, is using your work device and your personal device, it bleeds over, right? People have Slack, people have email, people have Microsoft Teams, people have, you know, Zoom on their personal and work devices. And I felt like one sort of amazing stat was 1 in 5 employees admit to never working on the work provided device because just they find their personal device more convenient, right? And it's really sort of expanded the scope of security to recognize, hey, there's actually less and less visibility to the apps and devices that people are using for work, which makes their jobs harder, right? If you don't actually understand the denominator of what you're protecting, then it sort of raises your risk of breach. And I think over the last year, many of the breaches that we've seen have to do with credential theft. I think Verizon quotes about 60 to 70% of breaches start from folks reusing credentials or using stolen credentials. So that's where we're here to help and make it easier for folks to use unique credentials and use multi-factor authentication, use passkeys wherever they're available.
This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Muzzle. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Muzzle is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Mozil is more than an Apple MDM. Mozil is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozil.com. That's business.mozile.com. Thanks to Mozil for sponsoring Apple at Work this week. You know, you brought up like the 1 in 5 never using their work device. And I actually thought about that. I thought, okay, number one, why? Is it that like they don't like their work device? They like the personal one? Or is it they don't like the perceived like Big Brother aspect of it? And then I got to thinking, like, in some ways, because so much of our data is in like SaaS applications, does the device in some ways matter? Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of went through that in my head. Like, you know, again, like we use personal devices for, you know, putting Slack on, you know, if your employer gives you a Mac, then you've got an iPhone personally, and you put Slack on it, or you take Zoom calls in the car. What's the deal? You know, is there a difference there? And in some ways, obviously there is. There's a compliance risk there. But in some ways, like, it's accessing cloud data. Why does it matter, you know, what the device is? What's your take on that 1 in 5?
Yeah, I think it 100% comes down to convenience, right? People prefer to use the tools that they have. And, you know, one thing I loved about 1Password is I've been a big Mac head, but growing up, we couldn't quite afford Mac. So I was the weirdo using weird themes on Windows to make it look like Mac OS a little bit. So I've been living across all the different platforms, right? I mean, in this room, I have a gaming PC, I have a home theater PC, I have a Synology, I have my Macs that I'm using for work, and I have an iPad that I have on my exercise bike, right? So 1Password's made sort of using multiple devices feel like using a single device, right? And just like you said, so many of the services that we use for work, I mean, I'm looking at my dock right here, you know, Slack, Reminders, Trello, Zoom, Signal, these are all cloud services. These are all cloud-backed services. So there's no reason I can't access this from any device that I have. Even I have this like weird System 76 Linux laptop that I have as well. So yeah, like that, I think it's 100% has to do with what people are comfortable and personally prefer. Now, the risk side is if there's malware on the device, like, you know, you can think of a couple of the breaches last year had to do with, hey, people are using an individual or an engineer with production credentials who's using a personal device, and that personal device had malware on it, and stolen credentials using that malware actually led to a breach, right? That's the risk for the business. That's the risk that the business has to account for. I remember talking to a CISO a few years ago, and I asked him, like, hey, what are the top two jobs that you think your team's responsible for? And his answer surprised me. His first answer was, I need to make sure people are happy and productive. Then second, I need to make sure that they're secure. I thought that would be flipped, but he started from the productive and secure side. And he sort of, you know, he made a quip of, hey, if number two is the number one job, I just make sure everyone was air-gapped and never using the internet, right? Which is not practical, right? So I think that's the challenge that security folks have is, I don't know about you, Bradley. I feel a hell of a lot more productive now than I was 5 years ago. And I think a big part of that has to do with I get to use the productivity tools that I prefer to get my job done. And people are happier using the Canvas, the Figmas, the Trellos of the world at work. And the genie's out of the bottle a little bit, but the tools are sort of inadequate for businesses to be able to secure this broad sprawl of unknown devices and shadow access apps.
Well, I actually wrote an article last weekend, and not knowing how this conversation would go, but I said the biggest problem facing Mac admins today is tool sprawl. It starts out very innocently. Like, hey, you know, like if I'm starting a company today, it's like, hey, we're going to get like these three tools. And then it's like, oh, as the team grows, oh, this one team's using this thing and the other team's using like, you know, and all of a sudden, like, you're like, wait, we actually need to audit this. Because again, a lot of these tools can be like, you know, they're $20 a month licenses, like you expense them. It's like, who cares? It's not like it's touching, you know, like again, a Trello. It's not like it's touching like your core infrastructure, but there is data in there. And that is something that like, as your team grows, the IT team needs to think about. Now, where do you feel like the role of single sign-on comes in here? Obviously, like I'm a big fan of Okta. I know you all just recently acquired the company Collide, who, you know, again, works, you know, does a great job of ensuring the device is compliant before letting you into Okta to access all of your corporate apps. But like, where do you see the role of SSO in overall security posture?
Yeah, and that's actually one of the pointed questions that we ask customers. And, you know, all the security admins, about 2/3 of them said that SSO was not a complete solution for securing their applications and employees' identities. And the reason why is I want to talk about this concept of an application maturity model, just related to that tool sprawl conversation, Bradley. So when I talk to customers, I sort of hear apps fall into four categories, and it's like 1 through 4. First is like unsanctioned apps. So, you know, I mentioned Cleft Notes earlier, like that would be like a classic sort of unsanctioned, bring your tool to work sort of example, something that's unknown to the business. Then second is like sanctioned apps, but sanctioned apps that aren't managed. So this might be, all right, let's say 10 employees want to use like Balsamiq to do some wireframing. That's not something that finance wants to purchase for the whole company, but they're okay with like 10 or 15 folks using it. that's an app that's never going to get behind Okta, right? Because it's going to take cost. You're going to have to pay for the SSO tier. Unfortunately, due to the SSO tax, you're going to have to manage that. That's just like not a priority for the business. Then the third tier, which I think businesses would like to believe is most of their apps, but you know, some of the data coming out of Gartner and even our survey is showing that's not actually true. The third tier is managed apps. Those are apps that are behind single sign-on provision to folks. You could think of these as like core apps like a Gmail or G Suite or, you know, the iWork Suite or Adobe or so forth. And then the fourth stack is sort of lifecycle managed apps. So you can think of GitHub, GitLab, things that actually touch production, things that exist behind like privilege access management. What we're finding talking to customers is a larger percentage of apps are actually falling into that first category of unsanctioned and the second category of sanctioned, but like unmanaged. And that's only going to increase. So we're finding single sign-on only affects that step three and step four. So that's sort of where we come in, where we're sort of secure by default of we store those credentials. We prompt you through our features like Watchtower to say, hey, did you know the service supports multi-factor authentication? You should probably turn that on. Hey, did you know this service, LinkedIn, has passkeys now? You should use passkeys because that's actually the most secure way to log in as well. And I think you'll see some of the announcements that will be coming out at RSA. We want to actually extend the scope of policy from those SSO apps into those unmanaged and unsanctioned applications too. Because like I said earlier, the genie's a bit out of the bottle. People are going to use the tools that they prefer to get their jobs done. And even when I talk to security decision makers, they're like, hey, people are happier. People are more productive. Like, I want to make sure to protect these applications, but also I'm not going to, you know, put up like a wall of Jericho and say, hey, you have no right to use applications outside of our sprawl. Because the reality is like everyone to some extent is working in a hybrid environment now. So these sort of like burdensome network-based solutions to block off like DNS access to external services, they're just not effective anymore.
Well, and I always, when it was like people, when everybody was in the office, I've always said that your biggest security problem was the printer. And I mean, you know, you can do all you want, but if something gets printed and walks out of the building, like, but, and then on the flip side in remote work, like you can lock down the device completely, et cetera, et cetera. All somebody's got to do is take out their iPhone and take a snapshot of what's on their screen. And so if there's only so much an IT team can do to secure endpoints, devices, access, that is a challenge. I mean, there's, you know, in some ways, like, you know, security is a journey, not an end goal. And I agree with you where if the more draconian you make it from an IT perspective, the more you will end up with shadow IT and unauthorized apps. Like it is a balance that you must find that like balance between productivity and security. And I think one of the things that has really helped on the Macs, I think it's one of the reasons people love Macs at work, is a managed Mac doesn't feel like a bad experience. Like it's not like the days of, you know, the PCs that had so many security tools where like half the CPU cycles are just used on malware, you know, 24/7 malware scanning. And so I think exactly. Where Apple's done a nice job. And even like with their endpoint detection API, like, again, you can leverage the businesses, get the tools they need without the employees like being unhappy. And I think that's one of the critical aspects. Now, like, so generative AI is like an interesting topic because there obviously is like a data leakage part, like, you know, employees going to like, you know, just using a free OpenAI account and like feeding it corporate data, like having it like, you know, again, taking code that you're writing and have it improve it. Like, okay, OpenAI now has access to source code that it shouldn't. And so like, how do you see this playing out? Like, are is this one of the things where IT is just going to have to make partnerships with, you know, generative AI tools? Are they going to have to like, you know, explicitly ban these? How does this like impact day-to-day productivity going forward?
Yeah, honestly, in our survey, it was like the top concern. 92% of the folks we surveyed said that it was a security concern for them because, you know, the reasons are exactly what you described. About half of folks are worried about folks inserting sensitive customer data into those tools, and 40% of folks were worried about incorrect or malicious data being fed back as a loop as well. The thing I actually worry about more is, you know, you know, who among us hasn't gotten a Rain AMI message saying, hey, this is your CEO, buy me $500 worth of like Riot points or, you know, Apple Play cards or, you know, Google Play cards or whatnot. And, you know, those phishing attacks wouldn't happen if they didn't hit sometimes, right? And what's generative AI really good at? Better context, right? And I think the cost of effective phishing attacks is going to get so darn lower with these generative AI tools that it's just going to, like, you, I think you saw that story a few months ago about, I think it was in Singapore or Hong Kong, somebody deepfaked a financial analyst and like convinced them to wire over $12 million or $20 million, something like that. Like, that's actually what I worry about, of giving these sort of superpowers to attackers and just making it easier for folks to defraud either your authentication systems or just like fool people to make bad decisions. I think on the usage side, it's sort of a, you know, with the way that, you know, every Wall Street analyst is asking a business, what your AI strategy is, what your AI strategy is. Businesses are going to have to adopt and utilize these tools, and they are really powerful. Like, you look at some of the stuff that Adobe's doing around audio editing, for example, it's like, it's mind blowing, right? And I think it's really cool because it's another indication of the curve of like technology adoption isn't only about speeds and feeds. It's actually mostly about like lowering the floor of accessibility, right? I just think about like when back in the day when I totally got Adobe Photoshop in seventh grade and like how hard that was for me to figure out to use, to the days now where you can use like a Canva or you can use like a Squarespace to spin something up in like a few seconds. Like, this is good. Like, making technology more accessible to folks is a good thing. Security teams are going to have to sort of adopt it sort of the same way that maybe the first generation when GDocs came out, people are like, well, you should only use Word and Excel because we can control through our data loss prevention stuff, like what data exists where, to where no business is not supporting something like GDocs and the collaboration that it enables, right? And like, it's not going to be like a training solution. It's not going to be building like a big wall to make it impossible to access these tools. It's going to be around making security the default, making privacy the default way to adopt these tools. That's going to allow us to safely use these tools.
Well, I kind of even think about the generative AI, like I did like email in like maybe 04, 05. Like we were still trying to figure out like what you could put into email, like what needed to be elsewhere. And I don't know if it'll evolve this way where like you'll start to figure out like what can go into AI tools versus what can't. Or if it gets to be like, let's just say like software development, if instead of like taking your code to an AI prompt, you're just having AI built into your software development kit and whatever you're, you know, wherever you're coding. And like it's, you know, it's built into there, it's sanitized, it's tracked what's happening, and there's audit logs. And I think that's the key. It's not necessarily trying to control everything, but trying to understand like the overall flow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of, you know, until made that announcement last week, I think everyone's presuming that Apple's going to take advantage of all these neural processing cores on the M series chips to do as much locally as possible. And honestly, like, I'm really excited. And, you know, obviously our security method or security design is very well known of running as much locally as possible. And I'm really excited to have APIs available at the device level, as opposed to having to rely on cloud services to be able to run these tools.
Oh, I agree. I think that absolutely could be critical. And then again, so you could even think if a company has a, I mean, let's say there's an API where a company can put in their LLM locally on their devices, and they again can control the data it's reading from, and then also audit the outputs and audit the inputs. And I think that would be a critical way to really leverage AI day to day, but in a very secure way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think our ultimately the biggest challenge here is bandwidth. Like, every, just even outside of the survey, I like, I guess we do have the stat about 70% of security pros saying that they have to be reactive just because they don't have enough bandwidth. The most common theme I have talking to every single customer is, hey, we can't hire enough security folks. Hey, we don't have enough security folks. So we're having to make trade-offs in terms of what we prioritize. And obviously adopting GenAI is like yet another thing to develop policy and tools and processes around. So honestly, I think that's where 1Password and the security landscape needs to sort of raise the floor of the problems that we're solving just to make it easier for folks to be secure by default instead of requiring human intervention.
Agreed. I've heard that for a number of years, that there are not enough security experts in the field for the needs that we have. I mean, again, the breaches are only getting more expensive. I think you all have a stat in here that highlights that. It's just, yeah, it's expensive to hire people, the right people, there are not enough of them. And so in some ways, our tools are going to have to get better. And I do, like you said, I do believe that there's going to be some really positive impacts around phishing with generative AI. I'm excited about that. And again, you know, we're so early in this and, you know, understanding of how it's going to impact our day-to-day. I'm sure in like 5 years, we can listen back to this show and think how crazy, you know, how stupid we sound in some ways. And I hope that's possible. Hope that's true, where like it just totally you know, it makes things a lot easier for companies to stay secure. You know, I really do. Again, I want to not go too deep into the survey because I want folks to go read it. Again, check out the link in the show notes. You go download it. Any final things you want to mention around the survey or what's next at 1Password?
Yeah, we're really excited to continue drive passkey adoption. I think we're announced a few weeks ago that we have over 800,000 passkeys stored through 1Password. And you know, I have to give a ton of credit to the Apple team for driving adoption for passkeys. I think their sort of early adoption has been absolutely phenomenal. And now you can use passkeys on services like LinkedIn and Gmail and PayPal. So really excited about that. And then second, for all any of our admins, look forward to RSA. We have a bunch of exciting announcements, especially related to the Collide acquisition and the Passage acquisition from last year coming up as well. So thank you for being customers. And keep the feedback coming. I know we have a lovely, engaged community.
Yeah, one password team is great. I think even as you all have gone, you know, quote unquote, more into the enterprise, it still has kept that ethos of that app you just love to use. And I love having, you know, I remember the very first iPhone, the very first App Store. And so people that like, if you're young enough to like not remember that and you only remember like, you know, iOS 7 and going forward, like you don't know how much easier it's gotten to use password managers on iOS specifically over the years. I mean, the early days of, you know, you there was no integration into Safari, and now there's like really, really deep integration. And again, even on macOS, like the way that password managers operate is so much better. And I think a lot of it's because users kind of demanded Apple to figure this out, because they clearly said like, hey, we want to use apps like 1Password, figure it out. And, you know, and so over the years, Apple has worked with, you know, password managers to make it a better experience. And again, it's one of those things. I love using 1Password because of how easy it makes my, you know, log in, log out, using passkeys, managing passkeys, using multi-factor authentication. I love using it, but it also makes me more secure. And that's how you know that we have to have more tools and experiences like that, where it's like it's a nice experience for users while they're getting better security.
Yeah. You know, sort of a guiding principle in my career has been like, it's so often this haughty attitude that we have in security of like users are the problem is just fundamentally wrong. Like the best security is utilizing your employees and having them effectively be the white blood cells for the organization. Like raising the floor is way more effective than putting harder and harder locks on all your freaking doors. Cause like without users understanding how they have an impact, it's just sort of a pointless exercise to put more and more barriers in front of them.
Yeah, and without users, we don't have jobs. So, I mean, that's the crux of it. Steve, thanks for coming on the show. We'll have a link in the show notes to download the full report. It's a beautiful PDF. It's worth reading. Just some key stats, and honestly, can be used to justify, you know, additional budget requirements or even just project shorting to roll out. This data can be some justification on why that's needed. So again, Steve, thanks for coming on the show and keep up the great work with the team at 1Password. Again, it's it's one of those things. I think I'll probably be retired before I finally give up 1Password. I mean, honestly, it's to the point, if you said I had to pick 1Password or my iPhone, I think I'd go get a Android phone and keep using 1Password. I mean, that's how much I love 1Password. So,
High praise.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thanks everybody for listening this week, and we will see y'all next week.